This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Now, you haven't seen After Top Ten, I imagine, because you have.
No, I have literally been out of the loop so fantastically that there are five movies in the top ten that I have not seen. It's a wonderful feeling.
Okay, can I ask you just then to speculate then as to you think they might be like before you go and see them?
Yeah, sure.
On the basis of who you know, what you know about the film, who's in it, and the title.
Fine.
Yeah? Yes. We have reviews of Atonement coming up. Rise of the Foot Soldier. I reckon I know what you're going to think about that.
Run, how Fat do you know? Boy, it might run. Be Citizen Kane.
No, I'm just guessing that. I think I might know about these things. Small Engine Repair.
I go away for a while, I come back, and you're second-guessing me, and suddenly everything's changed, and suddenly you feel the right to tell me what I think.
I know
this is
what
happens.
I know what you think. Number 10 is Death Sentence.
Well, all I know about it is it's based on the original novel of Death Wish, which was made into a film by Michael Winner. This is the novel sequel, which was then never used in any of the Death Wish 2, Death Wish 3, Death Wish 4 that, you know, that Winner then went on to disgrace himself with. So it's an adaptation of the sequel to Death Wish, the novel. Funnily enough, Death Wish, the novel, was actually very interesting. And I still quite like the first Death Wish film, but that's as much as I know.
It's amazing how long you can talk when you haven't seen it.
No, but I'm giving just you interesting background information.
Very, very useful. And I suspect Bratz, similar amount of information on this. Bratz, of course.
Hate the toys. My daughter wanted to take me to see it and take her to see it. And I put my foot down and said, no, I have to draw the line somewhere. And that was where I drew it.
Why? If your daughter wants...
Bratz.
But if your daughter wants to go and see it, you can always just listen to the radio or read a book or something.
Yeah, funnily enough, Simon, it's like sitting in church listening to the radio, reading a book.
I feel it's not.
If there's something playing in the cinema, you have to watch it.
Not if it's Bratz, you don't.
No, well, you know, I'm sad that I put every effort into seeing Bratz, but I failed.
Your daughter is neglected. Transformers is at 8, one of those Michael Bay films.
Yeah, now here's the thing with Transformers. You know how much I hate Transformers, right? So, to prove that I'm not a completely lousy father, I took my boy to see Transformers.
Oh, right, so he got what he wanted, but she didn't.
Well, no, but it's a slightly different case, okay? Because I was the nagging was more insistent on the Transformers thing, and also I'd already seen it. And, you know, and so here's what happened, and I fessed this up completely, right? I went to see Transformers again, which, as you know, I really, really kicked, and I really hated it. It was really, really terrible. And I sat there with my son, and he sat there, and he was absolutely halfway through. He turned round and he said very loudly, so almost everyone else in the cinema could hear. He said, "Daddy, this isn't rubbish at all." So apparently, it's not rubbish.
Well, clearly, maybe he's target audience and you're not. As James King said last week, sorry to add to the paranoia factor, I think he went to the toilet twice during Transformers, but he said it doesn't matter. You can go as many times as you like. You don't miss anything.
Yeah, James did keep going to the toilet in Transformers because it was like anything to have a break from the robots hitting each other. Second time around, I still thought it was terrible.
Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix at number 7.
It is one of the better Harry Potter films. I mean, everything, as we know, has got better. It's not on a par with Azkaban. I do think there are problems with the compression. I think you lose some material that, if you haven't read the book, you really do need, you know, in there, such as, for example, a major character meets an end that is incredibly significant, but it happens so fast in the film, I didn't even realise it had happened.
David Thewlis was on at 2 o'clock. I'm afraid you missed him.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm a big fan of David Thewlis, as you know. In fact, David Thewlis first caught my attention when he starred in Paul Greengrass's film Resurrected, which he was absolutely brilliant in. And I seem to remember that there was only one critic who got sensibly quoted on the poster.
Let me see if I can work out who it was.
That's right.
Not Johnny Vaughan.
No, not Johnny Vaughan. So I think I spied Greengrass as the future of cinema 15 years ago.
No Reservations at 6.
No idea. Chef-related rom-com starring Catherine Beta-Blocker. I mean,
my prediction is you're not going to like it. Rush Hour 3
be great.
At 5.
Not as good as Rush Hour 2, which wasn't as good as Rush Hour 1. I really find Chris Tucker very, very annoying. I like Jackie Chan, and it's a shame, but if I have to see a sort of anglicised Jackie Chan movie, I'd rather see Around the World in 80 Days, and that took no money at all. I actually thought it was quite good, him and Steve Coogan. I mean, you have to pair Jackie Chan up if you're doing English-speaking comedy with a sort of, you know, an English-speaking comedian. I'm not sure that what Chris Tucker is speaking is English. Steve Coogan was a lot better as a sidekick.
The Simpsons movie is still hanging around. It's this week's number 4.
So I've now seen it twice. Because, again, the family wanted to go and see the Simpsons movie and laughed all the way through. They laughed all the way through.
But presumably you said to your daughter, you're going to stay outside, you're not allowed in.
No, no, she wanted to see the Simpsons movie. They've never seen the Simpsons on television, but they wanted to see the Simpsons movie. And I now can add to, as what I said before, is, you know, it's a good, you know, perfectly functional movie. I'm not sure that it's a movie, but it's, you know, it's a perfectly functional cartoon that raises a chuckle and all the rest of it with the grown-up audience. Kids, it turns out, really enjoy all the bits when people fall over and bang their heads on things.
1408 at number three.
No idea, but it's based on a Stephen King novella. All best Stephen King adaptations are based on novellas rather than novels, because the novels are always too weighty to do anything with. And I think the script is Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, who did things like The People vs. Larry Flint. So I have high hopes. In fact, I'm going to go and see that on Monday.
You got a lot of catching up. Knocked Up at two. I think that's another catch-up one, isn't it?
Yeah, no idea. I heard Andrew Collins really, really liked it. I read a very snotty article by Joe Queenan in The Guardian saying that, in fact, it's completely reprehensible and rubbish. So the debate appears to rage. But, I have to go and see it. I can't build up much enthusiasm for it, but I will go and I'll catch it. Seen it?
Yes, it has been some speculation as to whether it breaks your rule about comedies advertised on buses.
It's not my rule,
isn't it?
No, somebody wrote in and said, can we make this a rule? And I said, no, it's not going to work.
Oh, okay. It was a suggestion then.
It was a suggestion, but it's not my suggestion, and it was wrong.
The UK's number one is The Bourne Ultimatum still.
Well, that would be directed by Paul Greengrass, who I think is one of the most
Johnny
exciting
Johnny Vaughan spotted him first, didn't he?
I think Johnny Vaughan spotted him coming up just around the time that Bourne Ultimatum was just about coming into. Oh, yeah, right. No, I mean, it was. I did listen to Hardeep review this, as you know, in the first week, and I rang in because Hardeep said, obviously, I think Paul Greengrass is the most exciting director working today, and I rang up to say, excuse me, I said that first. And Hardeep then asked whether that means he's not allowed to say it as well, to which the answer is no, he's not. That was mine. So it's great and it's mine. Thank you.
So no one else is allowed to praise it because we're on paranoia warp factor 10.
Yes. I just want to be clear about that, OK? Paul Greengrass owes his entire career to me.
I think that's very clear. So reviews coming up of Atonement, Run, Fat Boy, Run and Rise of the Foot Soldier, which I predict Mark won't like, but we'll get there in just a moment.
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
So we've given you the box office top 10, most of which we knew about. Well, Mark did anyway. Mark's in the Shetland Islands, but he has seen, since he's come back from his extremely long holiday, a whole host of movies. And I would imagine Atonement will be what comes up first, Mark.
Can I just start by saying I know that the reason that you sent Peter to the Arctic Circle is just to trump me. You know, Mark's in the Shetland curating a film festival. Yeah, but Peter's in the Arctic Circle meeting the Inuit.
He'll pick you up on the way back.
I'm sure. Okay, fine. So, Atonement, adaptation of a novel by Ian McEwan, which, I mean, I'm not a great reader, but this was one of my favourite books of the past few years. I really, really love the novel. It's complex and allegedly unfilmable. Unfilmable largely because a great section of the novel is about the process of writing and about the question of whether or not you can atone through writing, and this is not something which is inherently cinematic. So the bare bones of the story anyway is a posh British house in the 1930s, home of the Tallis family, including a young budding writer, Bryony, who kind of eventually becomes our narrator. And also Robbie Turner, who is the son of the family's housekeeper, who has been sent to Cambridge by the family. He's kind of almost like an adopted son. Bryony, who's very young, has a crush on Robbie, who's played by James McAvoy, and then she spies out of her window an event that happens between Bryony and her older sister Cecilia, who's played, of course, by Keira Knightley. Bryony then intercepts a letter from Robbie to her sister, which contains within it an unintentional obscenity. And as a result of this, of reading this letter, she believes that Robbie is something that he isn't. Then a sort of cataclysm occurs. She tells people that she has seen Robbie committing a terrible act, which she is sure she has seen with her own eyes. As a result of this, Robbie and Celia are sort of are torn apart. In the meantime, Cecilia is wrestling with her own feelings for Robbie. I'm going to cue a clip in sort of rather clumsily because obviously I'm here in Shetland, although not in the Arctic Circle. Here's a clip which I believe has James McAvoy and Keira Knightley.
I've never done anything like that before. And I was so angry with you and with myself. I thought if you went away to medical school, then I'd be happy, but I don't know how I could have been so ignorant about myself. So stupid. You do know what I'm talking about, don't you? You knew before I did.
Why are you crying?
I know exactly.
So, a number of things to sort of say about this. McEwan is a great writer, and he's been very sort of changeably served by movies. He really came a cropper with The Good Son. He was adapted by Pynter on Comfort of Strangers. And what Christopher Hampton, who's the writer on this, has done to solve the problems of the novel is actually not entirely dissimilar to what Harold Pynter did with The French Woman's Left Leg, in a way that enables you to have two stories going simultaneously, the real story and the fictional story, and questioning, you know, what it means to write a version of a story that's different to the real story. So far, so good. That's very ambitious. And actually, I think they've done that fairly well. Also, at the heart of the novel is a very sort of difficult thing to get on screen, which is the act of writing the unwritable word, the rudest word in the English language, albeit accidentally. And there was some debate for a while about the Americans saying, look, you really have to take this out because we can't have this in an acceptable movie. And it is, to the filmmakers' great credit, they said, no, this is the heart of the story. The sort of accidental obscenity is very, very important. They have kept it in there, and good for them. That's all very impressive. On the downside, I mean, I think that the thing with Keira Knightley is that there has been a lot of press about this, saying this is the thing that proves that she's a great actress. This is the thing that proves that she can actually do the stuff that we've been waiting for her to do. I disagree. I think it's the film that actually demonstrates completely the limits of her acting. Now, she's not terrible. She has been terrible in things in the past. We know that in Pirates of the Caribbean, she's absolutely awful. And, you know, she's just like head girl, teeth, 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 and who cares? She does try hard in this. The problem is that it doesn't amount to enough. And because the role that she plays is so central, and because she is surrounded by a brace of actually very, very fine performances from the rest of the cast. I mean, for example, she's up there against James McAvoy and Romola Garry, and there are some scenes in which she's with those two actors in both, you know, they're both there in the same room, and you really get the sense that she is struggling to hold her own. And it's very hard not to end up with the feeling that she's been cast because she's a box office draw, because she is, you know, she's Keira Knightley and she will bring the pundits in. The other problem I have with it is that Joe Wright, who's the director, made Pride and Prejudice, which a lot of people really liked. I was very, very underwhelmed by it. Joe Wright won a BAFTA, a Best Newcomer BAFTA for Pride and Prejudice, and I wasn't convinced by it. I thought it was kind of showy, and I felt that you could see the direction. It was very kind of mannered. Now, this is better. It is more ambitious. It still, however, has, a problem that I never engage with it fully emotionally. I mean, you've probably seen the sequence, which they keep showing on television, of James McAvoy's character on the beach at Dunkirk. You had Knightley and McAvoy on the programme the other day, didn't you?
Yes, and we talked about that particularly long 6-7 minute sequence. Sounded fantastic.
Well, it's a breathtaking sequence, but it does feel like, look how breathtaking this sequence is. I'm not sure that what it entirely does is serve the drama. I mean, my feeling about it was that what it did was serve the producers. I mean, it's the money on screen. And it's funny that whenever
it's a thousand extras that James McAvoy says the most you're allowed to have, and they're all there.
Yeah, they are all there, and literally the camera is saying to you, look, they're all here. No, really, they're really all here, and he's really there, and we're really doing this in one shot, really happening, really right now. And that's kind of slightly Kubrickian. I mean, you know, Kubrick was forever doing this, showing you, look, The Shining Hotel, we can go all the way around in one shot. It's like, yeah, fine. But, you know, I don't know that that helps the storytelling. I'm not saying that it's not visually impressive. I'm not saying that it's not choreographed in a way which is impressive. I'm just not sure that what it does is make the story work. Also, he's not entirely above cliches. I mean, there's one sequence in which IKEA jumps into a pond, and immediately we see James McAvoy coming out of a bath, which felt terribly cliche. There's a moment when James McAvoy goes behind a movie screen. He's separated from his lover, but on the screen you see the two lovers kiss, which is a thing we've seen, you know, endless times over and over again. And what that does is it gives me distance. In the end, I think here's the thing. I think one should go and see it because it's a brave adaptation of a brilliant novel that fails, but it at least fails aiming high. If there's one thing that's fundamentally wrong with it, it's that I think that it's central. Keira Knightley may get better, but she's not there yet. I think James McAvoy is really great. I think Romola Garry is really, really terrific. I think Joe Wright might develop into a fine filmmaker in the future, but not yet. And in the end, I came out of it feeling disappointed, but impressed at the same time.
When
it wasn't that balanced of me.
You mentioned James McAvoy and Keira Knightley being on the programme this week, and specifically with you in mind, Keira and me, we had this interesting exchange. Kira, for the health of our movie reviewer, Mark Kermode, could you... how many more pirates are we going to do? Or is that it?
I think I've done enough. I think they may do more.
So, just to be absolutely clear about that...
They may do more. They may do more. They may do more.
So there it is, the prospect of more to come.
Yes, I think she has done enough. I think that's complete. That's putting it completely correctly. No, it's fine. But you know, also, with any of those franchise things, I mean, all the main actors will drop out after the first three because they've all had enough. But the franchise is a franchise, and you know, the people who are pouring the money into it, making it, so they don't care. I mean, the Brookhams of this world don't care. They will keep milking that cash cow until it literally falls over in a field. So yes, we probably have Pirates 8 coming.
This email from Paul Reaney, I think the Leeds legend, someone else. Not that'll make any sense to you, Mark. Dear Simon and God, it says, my 62-year-old dad, Derek Reaney, was an extra on Atonement, and I'll bet you any money he out-acted Ikea Knightley. So I think it's time to retire that joke. Funny the first time, and indeed the third and fourth time.
Can I just say, for the record, if I live to be 100, I will go to my grave regretting the fact that I didn't come up with that gag. I mean, every day, there's a part of me
so
that
much
goes,
to regret.
You dropped the, you dropped
should we
the
do
ball there.
Run Fat by Run next?
Yes, is okay, that what you need to do?
10 minutes to four, so we've done Atonement. Let's do Run, Fat Boy, Run, starring Simon Pegg.
Yeah, well, the last time Simon Pegg and David Schwimmer, Horseface, were together, they produced that thing, Big Nothing, which was one of those few movies, you know, whose title did the reviewing for you, and it was really terrible. I really like Simon Pegg. I think he's very funny, but Big Nothing was really bad, and my advice to him after that, well, you know, on air, obviously I don't know him personally, was never work with David Schwimmer again, but apparently they're good friends. So now, David Schwimmer behind the camera, and we have Pegg is a dozy bloke who, at the beginning of the movie, runs out on his pregnant bride, who's played by Tandy Newton. Right, Tandy Newton as a pregnant bride, that means that's taken up to like about size 6 in the full state of pregnancy. So he runs out, and her several years later he's realised that he's made a terrible mistake. She is now living with Hank Azaria, or Hank Azaria is her new, you know, the new man on the block, and Simon Pegg realises that he wants Tandy Newton back, and Hank Azaria is athletic and muscular and runs marathons, and Simon decides that he should run a marathon to prove to Tandy Newton that he's worth it. Here's a clip.
I'm a hedge fund manager for Waterman Hughes.
I do high-level security analysis and operation for an upscale retail outlet.
Really? Libby said you were a security guard at a women's clothing store.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah. Right. Well, I should probably get a cab. I got a big run in the morning.
A big what?
A run? I'm training for the Nike River Run next month.
The what do you want? What?
The Nike River Run? It's a marathon race along the Thames River.
Why would you do that?
Well, it's a charity thing, you know. Plus, I love to run. I actually ran the London Marathon a little while ago.
Oh, that's a coincidence.
Oh, yeah? How's that?
I watched it on the television.
So, you know, my comedy thing is, well, it varies, but it's 5 laughs and upwards, and at least you're in the right ballpark. And I have to say that rule was passed, but only just significantly. Almost every time I laughed at Simon Pegg doing something that looked like it was not only that he was doing it, but also that he'd written it. I mean, it looks for all the world like a film that kind of began life as an American screenplay, which I think it did, that's then somehow been transplanted to London in order to get in Simon Pegg, who I would get Simon Pegg into anything because I think he's a really funny bloke. And then Simon Pegg, who takes a co-writing credit on it, has done a substantial amount of work from what appears to be on screen. And what you have is a movie which itself is pretty much all over the place and pretty much, you know, like it's a story about a guy who has to run a marathon to prove he loves a girl, and it ends exactly as you would think it does. And yet, along the way, you get the moments of Simon Pegg interaction. I mean, it's not without charm. It's just all the charm that it has is very, very little to do with the actual meat of the film itself. So why on earth, one asks, everyone must have seen the posters. There is a quote on the poster which says, "At last, the comedy of the year, simply perfect, go now." Somebody, Neil Sean on Sky News. So I'm thinking, who is Neil Sean? And how can anybody really have said that, really meaning it? Anyway, so I looked this guy up because I hadn't heard of him. And according to entertainmentnews.co.uk, Neil is the most read, most watched and most listened to showbiz reporter in the world. So I looked him up on Wikipedia, and they hadn't heard of him either. You heard of him?
Nope.
No, well, they hadn't heard of him either. Nope. And I found his website, in which he describes himself as a presenter, journalist, gossip guru, and global showbiz king. But crucially, right, not critic. Because, I mean, you know, look at that thing. It's like, at last. What do you mean, at last? I mean, it's September now. You must have said it in August. That's only 7 months into the year. At last, the comedy of the year. You can't say at last the comedy of the year in August. You've still got half the year to go. You've only been waiting since the beginning of the year. It's not possible to wait since before January to get to August for the best comedy of the year. Then, comedy of the year. Well, if that's true, then we really are in a terrible state. Simply Perfect. Perfect. Mary Poppins is perfect. Citizen Kane's perfect. You know, The Exorcist's perfect. I mean, Run, Fat Boy, Run has its moments, but perfect? What planet are you on? And so you come to a number of conclusions, which is either you haven't seen the film, you haven't seen any other films, you didn't really say it, or you're not really a critic that should be quoted in such huge letters on the poster.
Do other critics annoy you?
I tell you what really annoys me more and more is massive, I mean, not other critics, is massive quotes on the poster which say, the best thing I have ever seen in my entire life, and then in tiny letters, Neil Smidgen, Gloucester FM, or actually Neil Smidgen, Ohio FM and cattle farming radio. It's because all that happens as people drive past is they see something with big quotation marks around it. They imagine that it's been said by somebody who has got a right to tell you whether these things are. I'm sorry. I know I sound annoyed about this, but believe me.
What you reckon?
Even the people involved in, if you got Simon Pegg in, right?
We did.
I mean,
yesterday,
I like
yeah.
Simon. If you got Simon Pegg said, yeah. Simon, do you think Run, Fat Boy, Run is perfect? Even Simon Pegg would have to say,
clearly
no,
not.
No. I mean, yeah, it is not perfect. And what do you mean at last?
Okay.
At last? It's not even grammatical.
Some correspondence, because we have other things to do. This says, can I question Mark's five laugh rule, which you mentioned just a moment ago?
Yeah.
I saw Mel Brooks' History of the World Part 1, and it was rubbish. Yet, chuckles escaped my lips about 10 times. I think the bar needs raising.
Yeah, I think the bar needs raising, actually. And I think one of the reasons... The five laugh rule was established at the point that I was watching things like Norbit, which had no laughs in.
Oh, okay.
And I
so
felt
how many then?
Well, I mean, it's difficult because I think if I had laughed at all in Norbit, I would have had to fess up to it. And that's the thing. It was kind of like it was a way of reining my criticism in, saying, you know, well, even if I hated a film, if I laughed five times, I'd have to confess that it was at least...
if you laughed 10 times at History of the World Part 1, then maybe...
Yeah, I would say, no, but there's a difference. There's a sniffle, a chuckle, a, you know, a guffaw. I mean, an outright laugh. Let's raise the bar to 10 and see how we do.
See what happens. Someone, okay. A listener who claims to be called Nick Drake says, Simon, I greatly enjoy Mark's cerebral film reviews. I must, however, take issue with his statement that Tommy was shown with a quadraphonic soundtrack in Leicester Square in 1975. I saw the film at the time, as I was a big Ken Russell fan, and still am. I rather think that film soundtrack was in quintaphonic. And I've just looked up the word quintaphonic, and indeed it takes me straight to 1975 Leicester Square and Tommy. So
yeah. No, actually, you are completely correct. And in fact, the quintaphonic, which what it means is it means you've got the subwoofer in, which we have. But it's if you call it quintaphonic, nobody knows what you're talking about. But yes, it's basically what you're getting is you're getting the quad surround, but you're also getting the sub. It's pretty close to what you now think of as 5.1.
Andrew in Belfast, you mentioned Norbit. Andrew says, I recently won a copy of Norbit on a BBC station, but apparently they're having difficulties getting a copy because the warehouse that stored them got flooded during the rain in the summer. Thought the good doctor would appreciate this.
That's fantastic. Can I just say...
It's
just
an email from such a long time ago. It's when we used to give away prizes to competitions. That hasn't happened for a very long time. Anyway, what were you saying?
Can I just say, in response to the your man who wrote in about the quintaphone, I am just so impressed by the quality of our listeners that somebody would actually know that. And I am proud to stand corrected by and seriously, I'm genuinely proud.
So when it is being shown at the Shetland Isles Festival, which you are creating with,
you'll hear it in five. Yeah,
it's in quintaphonic.
Yeah, it's the four round and the one under.
I wish I was there to share it with you. We've got to mention. I mean, if there's a British gangster movie, it's bound to be rubbish. What can you tell us?
Right, Rise of the Foot Soldier, gritty and brilliant, according to the poster.
Is that Neil Smidgen again?
No, this Maxim, right? But Maxim.co.uk, not even Maxim the magazine, right? Fine. So inspired by the shocking true story of the Essex Range Rover murders, which didn't loom large in my consciousness. So the story is there's this obnoxious guy who goes from being an obnoxious football hooligan to being an obnoxious nightclub bouncer and then an obnoxious small-time hood. His equally obnoxious small-time hood friends all end up getting shot in a Range Rover and that's it. And if you remember Green Street, it's like Green Street, but without the added attraction of that bloke out of Lord of the Rings coming to England to be in the middle of it. Or it's like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, but without the wit and invention of Guy Ritchie. It's there's a quote from Nuts on the poster which says, a veritable feast of violence. And it is true that there is a massive amount of head kicking and sort of very gory. They are clearly enjoying the violence in that sort of really annoying, moralising way. Oh, you know, there's a lot of stuff wrong with this, but here, have a look at it. And the script is clearly written by whoever it is that wrote Big Vern or Cockney for Viz magazine. I mean, I was watching it. You think it reminds me of the joy of Derek and Clive. I mean, the use of the F word and the other word. Here's an interesting thing. Atonement uses in inverted commas, worst word in the English language once. And it is the central point of the entire sort of, you know, of the way in which the language flows out, for whether that word is as bad as everyone thinks it is. In Rise of the Foot Soldier, that word is used every other word. And the other word that it isn't is F. So that is it. And it is literally like somebody, if you took out those two words, the entire dialogue would consist of hello, that'd be it. There wouldn't be anything else in it.
And that's why we don't have a little clip to play. Let me mention next week, our movie reviews are going to be on Wednesday afternoon because of 2020 cricket, which takes us off the air on Friday. So all the movies coming your way, all the reviews after three on Wednesday. The movie of the week, Mark, would be...
Well, I think it is Atonement. With all the flaws, it is Atonement. And can I just say, incidentally, congratulations to Danny Dyer for not being in Rise of the Foot Soldier, because they must have offered him a role.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.